speaking of the Torah and set-apart spirit, as well as the mitzvah, which is another feminine noun, the A-H, the ah ending, the hey, makes a noun feminine. That's kind of interesting that Yahweh's name ends in an A-H, saying that he has maternal and paternal characteristics. Also suggests that since there's two hays, two people standing in Yahweh's name, that the second of the two represents mothers. The first of the two represents fathers, and so you have, in all likelihood, the intent was this is Abraham and Sarah, the mother and father of the covenant, representing Yahweh and our spiritual mother, the set-apart spirit. But that's important because it says, in your walking, she will guide and lead you. So you have three options for who she is. Spiritual mother, set-apart spirit. The Torah. The Torah ends in the ah. It's the hey sound, so it's feminine. And the mitzvah, the terms and conditions of the covenant, are feminine. So when it says that she will lead you, you have it's all three of those things. The terms and conditions of the covenant will lead you, in your walk. The Torah will lead you in your walk, and the set-apart spirit will lead you in your walk. They are all doing exactly the same thing, providing information that empowers you to walk to God. And when you speak of walking, not only is the hay, which it makes those words feminine, a person standing up, feet apart, walking, but walking is a huge part of the Torah story.
Right.
When, like you mentioned, when the children of Israel were slaves in Egypt for 400 years, Yahweh walked them out of Egypt. They walked side by side together out of the crucible of human, religious, political, and economic and military oppression to the promised land, walking. And the path that they walked was denoted, the signposts along the path that they wrote, particularly designating place and time, was Pesach, Passover, Matzah, unyeasted bread, Bukurim, firstborn children, leading to Shavuah, which is the promise of the enrichment and empowerment of seven, which is when the Torah was revealed, seven sevens after Bukurim, after being adopted into Yahweh's family, on Mount Horeb in eastern Arabia. And so the walk is the only path that Yahweh provides, the path that Yosha walked, is Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah. If you're not walking along that path, then you are not being informed by the Torah, the mitzvah, or the set-apart spirit. Matter of fact, even in the mitzvah, that path is presented. Why? Walk, halak, away from Babel, from your country, from Babylon, from the corruption and confusion of religion. Walk to Yahweh to become perfect. And the first two conditions of the covenant are both walk. And how do you walk to Yahweh and become perfect? Well, the second step along the way is matzah,
right,
where we are perfected. The fungus of yeast is removed from us. So in your walking, she will continuously lead and guide you. What does Torah mean?
Torah means guidance and teaching, leading you down the path to where you should go to live.
So here it says that the Torah and the set-apart spirit and the terms and conditions of the covenant will lead and guide you.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the Torah guide? Where does the terms and conditions of the covenant, where do they guide?
The mitzvah, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mitzvah. Where's the mitzvah lead you to?
Well, they lead us to Yahweh,
right,
and to Sukkah. It's our
right
point to be with
right
him.
Right, and do camping out with God, to being part of his family. That's where it will continuously lead you.
Before we leave Halak,
mm-hmm,
brother,
mm-hmm,
the LK, the walk, you know, is also interesting because I know you've already moved into 91, and
mm-hmm,
it also means the staff, of course, is besides support and walking, is
mm-hmm
a weapon to defend us against predators and thieves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shepherd's lead.
All those things,
right,
come
yeah
out. If you know
yeah
the language a little better, you can see a whole lot of things
right
trying to convey at the same time.
Right. And the first letter of halak, walk, is the hay. Shows a person standing up, reaching up, paying attention to God.
Right.
This is a walk.
Walking
of people who
walk
are paying attention to God. Right.
Wow.
Halak, guided by God, his shepherd staff. So in your walking, she will continuously lead and guide you, accompanying you when you rest. She will keep watch over you. She'll focus on you. And when you awake, she will communicate with you, enabling you to seriously consider the situation and the instructions. So, you know, we began this program, said there's only one way to God. You've got to think your way to Him.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't think without information. You have to have evidence to reason.
Right.
You know, even a computer can't process information without having the data. So you've got to have data, which is the word of Yahweh, and then you've got to think about it.
What goes in comes out. Yeah.
So when you're awake, when you're paying attention, she will communicate with you, enabling you to seriously consider. Wow. The situation and the instructions. Well, that's the path to God. And the role the set-apart spirit makes is she inspires those of us who closely examine and carefully consider what God has to say in His Torah teaching. This is very consistent. I mean, all you have to do
is translate
the words.
You can hear it all from anything. Always consistent.
Right.
Over and over.
Yeah, when you're alert, that's when this is going to happen. Not when you're apathetic, not when you're lazy. When you're alert, she'll communicate with you. And it's siach. Mm-hmm. She will direct you. She'll provide the information that you need to guide you, focusing on the apparent thought behind what is being conveyed, pondering the reasons for it. Very strong. And it says, the next statement is, for indeed. Now, this is something that you have to think about to appreciate. For indeed. The prescriptions and conditions of the covenant, the mitzvah, are a lamp illuminated by olive oil. And the Torah is light. You know, we live in a dark world. You want to see the light? Read the Torah. You want to know God who is light? Read the Torah. You'll see Him right there. And what is it about light? Where light exists, there is no darkness.
Right. Covers everything dark.
So, immediate, right. That's why you walk to God and become perfect, because He is light. The moment His light shines on you, you're perfect.
Yeah, it's not a metaphor. It's a real deal.
Now, if he said, two statements ago, it said that the Torah and the set-apart spirit were the same.
Right.
This now says that light and the Torah are the same.
Right.
So what does that make the set-apart spirit?
It makes it light and all makes her same thing.
Right. The set-apart spirit is light set apart from Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
The Torah is light set apart from Yahweh.
But I like your example for people. People always get it when you say, here's a pile of gold, here's an ounce of gold, here's a gold coin. What's the difference in the character of both? They're all gold.
Right.
You know, they're set apart.
Right. That's the difference. I mean, Yahusha, as a physical manifestation of Yahweh, is twice set apart. God's light set apart part of who God is, that very, very tiny part of who God is, set apart in our world, because now you're going from spiritual energy, like the set-apart spirit, to matter. And the transition from energy to matter is E equals MC squared. And so energy is the speed of light times the speed of light greater. The same amount of energy is the speed of light times the speed of light greater than matter. And so Yahusha is that little speck of gold compared to Yahweh, who is the planet of gold.
Hmm.
And that's gold. Both are gold. It's like Yahusha is a drop of a snowflake, frozen water.
Right.
And Yahweh is the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
That's the comparison between the two.
Oh, H2O.
Right. You know, that's why the Christian fixation on their Jesus Christ, they don't know His name, they don't know His title. They have no clue what He said. They have no clue what He did. But beyond that, it's like focusing on a toenail clipping as opposed to the individual. It's like focusing on a snowflake rather than the ocean.
And was there anywhere that Yahusha said, you know, focus on me?
No. He said, look to the Father. The Father is greater than I. that's, he quoted the Father.
Mm-hmm.
Spoke always of the Father. And so the Torah is light. The conditions of the covenant are lamp, illuminated by olive oil. Olive oil is important because olive were not only is the olive tree the oldest living tree in the that part of the world, the longest live tree in that part of the world, but the and deeply rooted. But beyond that, olive oil was the purest form of light in the ancient world. It was used as something that was nutritious to eat, and it was as a
healing
salve, an anointing material. Marvelous, the connotations of the light and the nature of olive oil, and it's a symbol of the set-apart spirit. They are the way of lives for rational discourse about being right. Out of context, that means nothing. In context, it means everything. This means that the Torah, which is light, the set-apart spirit, which is light, the Torah being of Yahweh, the Torah providing the path, that the Torah is the way of lives. Now, it's lives, plural. We don't even, most people have no concept. They speak of, you know, Christians will speak of eternal life. And they have no concept that eternal life begins right now.
Yeah.
It's not something that's awaiting you. It's something that begins right now. And so we have this mortal life, which the Torah was written to enhance. I know that for certain, Kirk, that your life is better as part of the covenant than it was not as part of the covenant.
I have no argument there.
So it's the way of lives, the life that we're experiencing now and the life that we will experience as light in Yahweh's eternity and exploring the wide variety of six-dimensional universes that will be created. They are the way of lives. So if you want to live forever, the way that you do that is you observed the terms and conditions of the covenant relationships as they are presented in the Torah. If you do that, then you will know the way of lives. It's the only way of lives.
Sure.
And also for rational discourse about being right.
Yeah.
Nothing is more important in relation to Yahweh than being right. This is not right in the sense of winning an argument with God. This is right in being when we are tested, if you will,
mm-hmm.
on whether or not we came to know Yahweh, whether or not we used His name, whether or not we acknowledge the terms and conditions of the covenant, whether or not we've come to revere and respect Him, whether or not we've acted upon this covenant relationship, whether or not we've done what He has asked us to do here, be observant. Closely examining and carefully considering the terms and conditions of the covenant and the Torah's teaching. If we've done that, then we're going to be right relative to everything that God has to say.
Yeah.
And that is the ultimate goal. You want to be right when it comes to knowing who God is. You teach art. And you present in that arch class, you need to test people's knowledge, whether or not they understand what it is that you've been teaching. And so you'll give a class on pigments or a class on perspective or a class on light. And there are answers which says, yes, you understand, and therefore you can engage and do this. And there's answers that are just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it means you can't do it. Well, when it comes to Yahweh, there's right and there's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're wrong, if you're religious, for example, you're wrong. If you want to be right with Yahweh, you've got to engage in the relationship as He articulated it in the Torah. That is the set of instructions that makes you right with God.
And there's nothing more uncomplicated than this is the path. You're either on that path or you're not on that path.
Correct. You're either part of the covenant or you're not.
Yeah.
And there is not a new one. There never will be a new one.
There's
no definitely option. Not a second one.
No, there's no running around it.
No. No, and it doesn't matter what's in your heart. And this is the thing that is so different between Yahweh and religion, relationship with Yahweh and religion. All that matters, whether or not you're in a relationship with Yahweh, is whether or not you're right regarding acting upon what he said, understanding it. But in religion, it's about being good. You know, it's about being a good person, about doing good things, about not being a bad person, about not doing bad things. God doesn't really care.
God also knows ain't nobody good. I mean, how many times do you have to say so? Man is not good.
Right.
He has some wonderful qualities, but he ain't good.
Let's just say you pay no attention whatsoever to the covenant or to the Torah. You reject both. Mm-hmm. But you are insanely philanthropic. And every little old lady that you've ever met in your life, you've opened the door and you walked across the street. You have devoted your life to building theaters and parks. You've never said a swear word in your entire life. You not only are learned, but everything that you've learned, you've taught others. You dress humbly and you provide clothes for the poor. You are really good, but you're not right with God. What's going to happen to your soul? What's going to happen to your soul?
It's diminished. It's going to disappear.
Right. So the best possible person from a good point of view is going to cease to exist. And you look at Dode. He most certainly wasn't good. He did lots of bad things. And yet, from God's point of view, he's righteous because he was right.
Right.
It's about being right. It's not about being good. God knows that it's impossible for us to be perfect. That's why he has provisions that make us appear that way. But you have to be right. You have to give the right answers when it comes to God. It also says that, speaking of the Torah, and the conditions of the covenant, as well as the set-apart spirit, that they're not only the way of lives, but they're for rational discourse about being right, and for the purpose of you closely examining and carefully considering, so as to protect you from the woman who is evil.
That's who she might be.
Repulsive. Offensive, severing the relationship from the smooth and seductive tongue of the treacherous whore. I guess, who is the whore?
Whore of Babylon.
Right. The whore of Babel, the whore of confusion. Right. You know, in fact, this whore is so prevalent that in the last comments that Yosha makes, upon his return, is Babylon has fallen. And the last thing that he asked before his return is, come out of her, my people, speaking of Babylon. Why? Because the most popular religion in the world is Babylonian Christianity. The whore of Babylon is Christianity, particularly Roman Catholicism and Orthodox Christianity, but it's Christianity. That's the smooth and seductive tongue.
Yes.
Of the whore.
That would mean so, huh?
And so, by knowing the Torah, by observing the Torah, by prioritizing
the
Torah,
talker.
Right, you're not going to be fooled by the seductive nature of Christianity. Christianity is seductive. Oh, it's easy, man. All you got to do is believe.
Yeah.
Got its own little value system. You know, it's got its own prophet. You know, it's got its own carols and its beautiful and seductive buildings. Or in Indiana.
Beautiful art.
Yeah, beautiful art. Or in Indiana, it's nothing but a whore. It's the whore of Babylon. Now, for those who are of the belief that Satan is that ugly dude that's going to be goatish looking with the horns and a tail and red in color, I got news for you. Satan is the whore.
Yeah.
And she's beautiful. God says she's beautiful. She's seductive because she's beautiful. Satan never wants to be known as the adversary, which is what Satan means. He wants to be known as the Lord. That's why Yahweh uses the term Lord to name and to describe Satan's ambition. The Lord is Satan. Satan is the whore. Satan's beautiful. A creature of light. Paul saw Satan on the road to Damascus. Flashing light. Seductive. Satan on the road to Damascus quoted Dionysus' famous line, "It is difficult for you to kick against the goad." Which means it's difficult to rebel against religion with the status quo in society. That's why Pauline Christianity embraced not only the Dionysus character of the Greek religion, basing his Jesus Christ after Dionysus, but also is based on Gnosticism, which was the political and philosophical and religious theme of the Greek religion, which had permeated Rome by that time. So he just accepted it as opposed to being opposed to it. So the whore of Babylon, this treacherous whore, is the one that Yahweh was trying to keep us from. And according to God, this whore is evil. And so today, an understanding of the Torah, what is the first thing, what is the primary thing, the most popular thing that the Torah annuls?
That the Torah annuls?
Yeah.
Any other option?
Well, how about Christianity?
Oh, of course.
If the religion of Christianity is Pauline's letter, Paul's first letter, Galatians, and then later Romans, are about a new covenant that's of the Spirit as opposed to of the flesh, that is annulling the covenant and also all of the instructions in the Torah and replacing them with a new testament, a new covenant.
Yeah.
And so the thing that a close examination of the Torah will prevent is prevent you from being a Christian. That's
right.
First and foremost. The Quran claims that it confirms the Torah. Now, it's the antithesis of the Torah. And, you know, you are so stupid to be a Muslim that it hurts. I mean, you really have to be an absolute nincompoop to be a Muslim. It's that the Quran is the dumbest book ever written, the most immoral book ever written. It isn't accurate historically. It has no prophecy. It's scientifically, it's a laughing stock.
Yes.
It's grotesquely immoral. And Muhammad was a pervert. It is the worst book ever written. And so if you're a Muslim, shame on you. It's just that, you know, you don't even care enough to read your Quran. And if you've read the Quran and you believe that that is God, then you really are. You deserve to be with Satan. Good luck with that. Yeah, particularly I'm going to worship a God that spends all of his time in hell tormenting everyone that doesn't obey him. Yeah, right. Okay.
Okay, pal.
Okay, yeah, the God whose primary instruction is for you to be a jihadist and kill for him. And if you aren't a jihadist, says that you are a hypocrite and that he orders his good jihadist Muslims to kill you so he can torture you in hell, which means it's impossible to be a peaceful or moderate Muslim, according to the Quran. But in Christianity, it's the Christianity's New Testament. Pauline Christianity is based upon annulling the Torah. So if you observe the Torah, the way that it keeps you from being seduced by the whore is it provides you with a foundation of truth that causes you to dismiss and reject Pauline Christianity.
You know, Yahweh gives a lot of little extra subtle clues. You know,
mm-hmm.
where you translate here, tongue, lashon, it's just language and speech.
Right.
If you go back down to the roots, you've got a carnival barker, you've got a charmer.
Uh-huh.
A slanderer.
Uh-huh.
You've got a wagging of the tongue, as in Babel.
Yep.
Babel.
Yep.
I mean, he dropped so many breadcrumbs.
Yes, you really do.
Your way back, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, you just ain't looking.
Yeah, deeper you dig, all of these words are self-explanatory. They actually explain how religion prevails and how this slippery and flattering nature. I mean, Muslims are told that they're the best.
Yeah.
Christians believe that they have the preferred religion. It's flattering.
Oh, yeah.
It's talking. It's seductive.
Mm-hmm.
That's the nature of it. It's all based upon language and speech. And yet it's promoted by the disloyal harlot. And the reason God uses the term whore speaking of Satan's religious influence, and this is feminine again, because what is it adversarial of? It's adversarial of the set apart spirit, the Torah, and the covenant, all of which are feminine concepts and the terms and conditions of the covenant. The mitzvah, the bereth, the Torah, and the set apart spirit are all feminine, and so Satan's religious alternative is presented as a whore. It's feminine.
Yeah. Well, you've got the covenant as a marriage contract, and so therefore what you're doing, it uses the metaphor of you basically cheating on him or going to some other god, you know, another spirit, you know. So it's a good metaphor.
Yeah.
I mean,
precisely.
Very easy to understand.
Precisely. So then he says, you should not genuinely or continuously covet or find desirable her beautiful and graceful appearance in your heart. And you should not let her obtain control of you on an ongoing basis with her flaunting display of flashing rays of light or her flirting eyes. So is Satan presenting the alternative, or is Yahweh presenting the satanic alternative to him, the religious alternative to him, is the ugly satanic character?
No, it's not
the
ugly old demon in a red costume, no.
No.
He's saying this is a real beautiful thing. Beware.
Beware. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And if you were to go to like almost any European city, which are the most beautiful buildings in those cities?
Well, they're always the churches.
Right. If you were to go through the Islamic world, what are the most beautiful buildings in the Islamic world?
The minarets.
The mosque. Yeah, the mosque. And if you were to take a tour from India, what's the most beautiful building? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I remember in Thailand, you go see the gold Buddha.
Yeah. All the temples in Thailand. Right.
Those are
the big buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Those are, and even the government buildings, most countries mimicked temples and shrines to build their government buildings, and in ancient cultures, the heads of those governments and the seats of the governments were considered gods. And the Caesars presented themselves as gods. Almost every king, the Pharaoh of Egypt, presented himself as a god. So his political building, his home or castle or palace was a religious shrine because he was a living god.
Well, look at our capital.
Of course. Yeah, in fact, it's even named for Capitoline Hill. The term we use, capital, is from the capital of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And the Senate is named after Rome. And of course, the buildings are designed in Roman architecture. And the eagle, which is the American symbol, was the symbol of Rome. And don't think for a moment that's good. That even though Paul wrote in the book of Romans that all governments are of God and that we should submit to them and that they never wield the sword but for good and that they're all appointed by God, God's point of view is the exact opposite. And not only is there no government that speaks for him and that all governments are bad, of the Roman government in particular, he calls it the most treacherous, the most disgusting, the most deadly beast in all of human history. But he says of that beast that the empire of Rome will die, but out of the empire of Rome will become a beast that will survive to the very last days, which is why he's saying Babylon has fallen, come out of my people at his return, because the beast that grew out of the Roman Empire is Christianity, the Roman Catholic Church. And the country nationally that is the most like Rome today, particularly with its massive military projection of power around the world, is the United States.
Absolutely. No denying.
So if you were looking for the beast of the last days that grew out of Rome, from a nation, it's the United States of America, nothing close. From religion, it's Christianity, and particularly Roman Catholicism. And there is no other rational explanation. And all you got to do is read Daniel to know how much God is opposed.
Leave no doubt who he's talking about.
Yeah, and the beast is associated with the whore. This is Babylon.